Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Bhutang tamang sanghang namasami. Today I was, after the meal, I went for my daily walk. And today in particular, part of the idea is try to clear the mind a little bit, have a little bit of space, and allow a level of trust to come up that I'll think of something to say. So I was on my walk and was having the space, and then as I was coming up Angela Drive, a car stops and I see somebody inside waving. And so it was a Thai woman and her daughter who know me, and everything changed right there. And they came out of the car and we got into conversation. And it just brings up that, but you know, I felt really happy afterwards. It was okay. I felt happy. It wasn't what I had planned, but it was good. She was in a good space. She's been going through a tough time, and I was really happy to hear that. And it's not over, but she's working with it. And then I usually, have a little routine. Not that I do this very often, but okay, try to get in here early so I can be in here before anybody else comes, and try to empty the mind and just breathe. And then I thought, well, you know, don't push it. Just be natural. So I just stayed in our little tea room and just had a really little bit of conversation with Lumpur about nothing in particular. And it just made me reflect how just letting go into that trust that things will come together is such a difficult thing for us to do, how we're often, whether we know it or not, we're trying to set up the circumstances that are going to allow things to work. And so already we're exerting a little bit of pressure, control, and sometimes we need to do some of that. But I wonder sometimes, do we do it more than we need to, and what's controlling that, what's behind that? And part of that is that takes me to, often think about how resilient, how flexible human beings really are if we trust that and open to that, that usually things work out if we just, we have to exert some things. Sometimes we have to make decisions. But how much do we push forward, and how much do we kind of let things unfold? It's not always easy making that decision. I remember when I was in the early days of Abhaya Giri, and Casa Serena is the property right adjacent to the monastery, and it's where the women's accommodations are. But when I first got there, there was a couple living there, and they had invited me to come and live on their property. And then Peter passed away in 2000, and Mary passed away in 2002, but before she passed away, she deeded her property over to Sangapala Foundation. She really wanted a place for women on the mountain. She felt that was really important. And it is. It's important for everybody to have that space, to be there. So I was one of her caregivers. She was ill, and then she was eventually diagnosed with colon cancer. And for about 6 weeks after she came home from the hospital, I was the main caregiver with her sister. And I'd never really done that before, and I had the best support anybody could ever have in that situation because I was right next door to the monastery. And so there was plenty of support, plenty of time for reflection. Mary and I loved each other. She was a very dear friend. And her sister, Judy, and I became very close as well in that process. And then after Mary died, I stayed in the house, and it was a time of, it was one of those situations where I felt like the bottom just kind of fell out, and I didn't really know what my next step was going to be. It felt like the uncertainty was just right in my face, big time. It felt like a bubble of uncertainty. And the question came up, or the doubt came up, maybe that's what I'm doing here. Maybe I was supposed to help Peter and Mary pass through this life. And maybe it's time for me to move on. But there was another voice that just said, just, you're not in any place to make a decision. Just give it time. Just let it be. Can you find your peace with this bubble of uncertainty that I was surrounded by? And it was a fantastic teaching for me, because what I was doing without really thinking about it beyond just that voice saying that was just allowing it to be and allowing myself to be present with what was going on without trying to change it and without trying to run from it. And without trying to really get figure it out really fast, because that's usually what we want to do. We want to figure it out. And what I learned from that was we can transform the way we face our lives if we're willing to be with what is. It's not that I don't have moments of doubt. It's not that I don't have moments of fear, confusion. But what I noticed through really opening my heart to that experience was a level of trust in the practice that just deepened immensely. And I don't think anything's quite moved me to that level of confusion since. And that doesn't mean it won't. It's certainly difficult times. But it gave me a strength, or it helped me to realize a strength that was already there. And it was a really good teaching for me. And it was kind of Mary's last gift to me, in a way. By letting me be her caregiver and letting me share that experience with her. I don't know, what is it, nine days ago, 8 days ago, we all came and we knew we were going to do a 10-day retreat, or, you know, that was what we hoped for. For some people, it didn't work out like that. We came, we set up the hall, and we quickly fell into our own established routines, in a way. I'm sure most of us set up our rooms in just the right way, and everything has its place, and we're so quick to get our routines, to put them in place, to find our comfort level. And now change is in the air. I certainly have been feeling different energies moving through my body. I've seen the mind jump ahead. Well, will I pack in the morning? That's a pretty small thing. But today I was walking, and it's like, oh, the thought came up. Oh, this will be the last lunch walk that I do this year around this area. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that the mind has started to go out a little bit, looking forward. Maybe there's a little bit of resistance, wanting to hold this precious space, this quiet. And maybe there's this kind of energetic, really looking forward to change, to something different. Maybe it's not quite so defined. There's just a different experience that the body's going through, the mind's going through. Maybe the mind doesn't settle quite as easily. So I don't know. Everybody has their own experience, but no matter what we want, what we would like to hold on to, or what we're looking forward to, it's going to be as it is, whatever happens, and we don't really know how that's going to go, what's going to happen. I'm sure for some, I took a retreat in Thailand, and that was where I learned about meditation and Dhamma, and then went to England for the transition back to the West, and ended up staying about 10 and a half months between Amaravati and Chithurst, trying to get a handle on what happened. What happened in that Dhamma talk? What was that all about? I'm still figuring it out. And then there was a retreat offered at Amaravati, so it was within my first 6 months. And I signed up for the retreat, and it was still at Amaravati, but they have a little pocket, a little corner that they have a retreat center. And it was a metta retreat. And had a really, I'm not going to go into the experience, but I had a very powerful experience in that retreat because something came up around a death that had happened in someone related to me on the date that the retreat spanned. And it just, stuff came up around that, and stuff that I'd never seen before. And it was really nothing, but unbeknownst to me, my heart was really holding on to a feeling of guilt around telling someone that I would come and see them again, knowing that I might not. And then I didn't, and then they died. And it was a small thing. It was an innocent thing. I was young. There was no ill will in it. And I didn't even know I was carrying that until this retreat, where there was the space and then the date. And then it just kind of hit me. But I couldn't have been in a better situation, because we were really being encouraged to practice forgiveness. And so I really worked with that. And a very powerful experience with that. And some very good, calm, some of the best meditations I've ever had in my life. I've never had them since. And the teacher kept saying, you know, we're coming to the end of this retreat, and some of you have had really, really strong, clarifying experiences. And don't be attached to those. So be careful, don't be attached. And I'd sit in the meditation, and I'd be kind of observing what was happening, and the bell would ring. And the first response in my heart was, ah, darn, the bell. And then I still didn't see it. And then the retreat ended, and he said it again, don't be attached to your experiences. You know, just, you have to let go, the retreat's ending. And he gave this talk, and the whole time I kept thinking, I'm not attached. I'm very clear, I'm not attached. And then as soon as he rang the bell and it was over, I literally crumpled into a heap and just started sobbing. And then this voice just, wow, you were attached. Sometimes we really need to be hit over the head with it to see it clearly, because we're in such denial. So I'm sure nobody's quite at that level on this retreat, but I don't know. Just be careful. It was a really frightening experience to me. It was very telling how the things that are so close and are so big are sometimes so close we don't see them. But we learn from them, for sure. And that's what this practice is so much about, being willing to open and see and learn and to make our mistakes. And to be willing to make our mistakes, because those are the things that help point the way, that help give us guidance. Those are the compasses in some ways. That didn't work. I have to reflect on that one. There's been some wonderful teachings on this retreat. And times of transition, we can get caught up in the momentum and we can forget where we were a moment ago. And it's just, I find it really helpful to just keep tapping into the body and trying to get a sense of what the body's leaning towards, or what kind of energy is there. Well, where are my shoulders? Are they up? Am I anxious? What's my stomach doing? We have a 2-week retreat. Everybody in the community gets a 2-week personal retreat during the official rains retreat period, which is generally the full moon of July until the full moon of October. And at this point, I've done quite a few of them, and I try to let them be more open and not as structured as I used to have them be. And I didn't really have a theme, but what kind of unfolded was I'd been just recently started seeing a physiotherapist, and he pointed out how completely off I am about what I think is a straight, even, equal-sided body. And he would do this thing where he took my legs and he kind of adjusted them, and then he said, "How does that feel?" And I said, "Feels like I'm knock-kneed." He said, "You're not. That's straight." And then he did this thing with my head. "How does that feel?" So it feels like I'm tilting my head. "You're not that straight." And he did a similar thing with my shoulders. Just kind of helped me get a sense of what straight was and how that perception of straight was a little bit skewed. So I was really working with some of the things he was telling me. And I find, and I still find, it's very difficult to change a posture. You really have to be consistent and be putting the effort in over and over again. And then I'm not always sure, am I really straight? We don't have a lot of mirrors in the monastery, so just kind of have to go by feeling a lot of the time. But what was useful in that is that I could see that I was getting tight because I was trying to get my shoulders back. And so what became the theme on that 2-week retreat period was spaciousness and ease. So spaciousness, just breathe in and allow a sense of spaciousness and ease. Just let the shoulders drop and relax. And that started kind of pervading more moments on the retreat that just weren't when I was thinking about posture, but it kind of became the overall theme. And I would encourage any of you that might find that useful during this transition time in particular to bring that to mind when you find yourself moving a little bit too fast forward or resisting. Just spaciousness and ease. Because it's inevitable that as soon as the silence is lifted, there may be resistance. Maybe like, "I'm not going to talk. I really love the silence." But then as soon as it's lifted and you say your first word, you might find that it's just this, it just this endless flow of words starts coming out, and who knows? You'll have to see what your experience is. That's what I've experienced in the past. Well, I'm not gonna. This is really precious. This quiet. I'm not gonna talk to anybody. I'll just smile and just be, and then. But it's not a bad thing talking to people. We have to do it. It's a nice, it's lovely. People you've been sitting with for this time, you get to actually compliment them on something that maybe they were doing that you found helpful, or who knows. But when you see yourself, if you see yourself, if you don't get caught into it too fast, and you see yourself kind of the body energy changing, things tightening up a little bit, just remember spaciousness and ease. And take a breath. It's always that pause button that I'm always looking for, and I can talk about, but I always forget to find it. So it's just an encouragement for that. Most of the rest of the world out there hasn't been on 10 days of retreat. So your energy is going to be probably a little bit different. But what a gift you can bring out into that world is the energy of 10 days of retreat. And then what you can carry, what you can remember, recollect. What are some of the high points of this retreat for you? What are some of the things that you've learned? What are some of your insights? And let those move with you into the world as you start picking things up that you have to pick up. Don't leave them in the hall. They don't do any good there. Things that have helped you get centered, helped you get grounded. How can you take that into the movement into the world? If you have to go to work, or you have to go back to your families, or for us, we have to go back to the monastery. And I've been gone for 10 days, I know there's going to be things on my desk. But what's been useful on this retreat that you might be able to shift a little bit to make it work, to remind you, to help you recollect what some of the important things of the retreat have been for you? What's been useful? You've been taking them into eating your meals, going back to your rooms, and now you just have to kind of extend it a little bit further and in a little bit of a different fashion. This is what makes this practice. It's useful here on a retreat setting because we get insights, it deepens our understanding, helps replenish our sense of commitment. But it also has a use in that it helps us survive the world in a way where we can feel joy in what we're doing. That we can feel happy in ourselves and in our actions. And you don't really have to explain to anybody what you've been doing, or try to tell them or try to teach them, or you just be. If you just be what you're learning, let it be a part of you. That benefits the world greatly. My parents never really could quite understand what I was doing. I come from a Catholic background. And at one point, my dad thanked me because in our conversations, what it did is, for him, it opened up a more, he said it opened up the contemplative side of Catholicism for him, and he found that very beneficial. And my mom never really said a lot. I never talked about it much outside of it being my life. I talked about it as anybody would with something in their life. Oh, I'm Ajahn Pasano, went back to Thailand, and da-da-da-da-da, and we did this, and we're on a 10-day retreat. But never really pushing anything. And my mom, when she was on hospice and dying and I was taking care of her, and she just said to me one day, she said, "I just want you to know you're in the right place. You're doing the right thing." And I didn't ask her. And at that point, I didn't need it anymore. I felt at peace with all of that. But I also felt a lot of joy that she expressed that. And she said what she felt. So I think a lot of, I know people here. I know almost everybody in this room. And many people are involved in groups, have regular groups that they sit with, or organizing groups, or people come to the monasteries, people who come to the monastery quite a bit. I have no doubts that people are already doing some of this, but that's all I can share with you, is just some thoughts that I have about this. There was a comment about the chanting, and not everybody likes to chant, but what I found in the chanting is some of the most down-to-earth and kind of the heart of the Buddha's teachings are in the chanting. So maybe you don't like to chant. Maybe you do. If you do, it's a great way to you might have noticed, to really gather your energy and to lift your energy, but it's in a gathered sort of way, unscattered. But it's the material in there for reflection is very potent. The only danger is if you do it all the time, you can still be chanting with a tape or with other people, and you can be making your grocery list while you're chanting, just because it's committed to memory and other people are leading, and you might not get much of the list made, but it's interesting how you can do that. So then it's just remembering to come back and letting that chanting help center you, lift your energy, and offer reflections for the day, the evening, whatever. Some of the things that you found useful in the retreat, if you've never done a monastic retreat, or if you have, maybe something else has come up as something, oh, I kind of like that. That's been helping me get clarity in first thing in the morning. Think of what might be added to your daily routine, which we establish so quickly. And now you've been away from your routine for 10 days. So it's an opportunity as you begin to establish your daily or picking up your routine again, bring something else into it that might be useful. Just kind of based on your experiences with this 10 days, what small thing? It's kind of like when Por is talking about it, and don't do something that's reaching for the clouds. Do something that's practical. Start small. And notice, stick with it for a while. Maybe if it's just, if you really have a hard time getting up in the morning and meditating before you have to go off to work or something, maybe it's just having a shrine, and before you do anything in the morning, going and bowing to that shrine, and then before you leave your house or your apartment or wherever, bowing to your shrine, something that just helps you to recollect what's important to you and what your values are. Start small. And if you're already doing some of that, maybe there's something else you can build into your routine. And try it. Try it for a certain amount. Determine to do this for a certain amount of time. And if it's useful, keep doing it. And then think of something else. If what else can I be doing to bring the recollection to remind me what's important? What's important in my life? What's important for my heart? One of the most important things in our practice is Kalyanamitta, people that we that share our aspirations, that speak a common language. So you don't have to necessarily find the words. People that we have a sense of trust for, that we can open up. Sometimes all we need to do is say it. We don't need an answer, we just need to say it. And in that saying, with someone who we trust and who can listen, we get a sense, we know. Or people that we could discuss some aspect of the chanting or some sutta that we read that we find really useful. Tremendously important. It's impossible to really do this on our own and have the clarity and to make sure that we're really on track. Because that kilesa of delusion, it's really, really hard to see. I remember asking Lumpur one time, well, I can understand greed. You can usually get a hit that that's what's going on. And anger, well, yeah, you can usually get a good hit about that. But how do you know if you're deluded? How do you know it's delusion? And that really perplexed me. It was a really Lumpur simple answer. Well, they're suffering. They're suffering. So that's a very good place to tap into right there is, am I suffering right now? Lumpur gave a great reflection this morning on the Four Noble Truths. And we don't have to complicate any of it. Just bring it in a way that you can actually use it in everything that you do. That's what is the beauty of this teaching. That we can use it in every single thing that we do. But we have to remember. We have to recollect. So we sometimes need to set up little reminders. I know Thich Nhat Hanh's community, it was the bell. It would ring the bell, and then you're supposed to stop and take a few breaths. So whatever is helpful, whatever you can fit in, nobody else has to know you're doing it. You can do it at work in the middle of your work, something that's just going to help you remember. Listen to teachings once in a while. The suttas, you know, you can pick up the suttas and read them, and maybe it's not all 100% clear, but there's gems in there for everybody. And even if you don't feel like you're getting entirely what is being offered in the sutta, undoubtedly you're getting something. And what I like to reflect on those when I'm reading those suttas is just, these are human beings, and really visualize human beings kind of having these confusions or having the opportunity to get clarity with a being who was fully realized. But they didn't really all believe that he was really... There were people who doubted him too, the Buddha. One of my... one sutta that I really like, I think it's in the Majjhima Nikaya, is... It's very endearing. And it's King Pasenadi later in the latter years of his life. I think they're probably in their 70s, the Buddha and King Pasenadi. And he goes to the Buddha and he bows to him and he praises the Buddha. He just can't praise the Buddha enough and for all that he's given him in his life. It's very sweet. Sure, a lot of us have similar feelings for our teachers, for our Kalyanamitta. And look into your tool chest every now and then and remember what you have in there. Remember you have metta practice. Things that you can pick up when different things are going on. it's really there. It's there in your chest. You just have to remember to look. So I feel a lot of gratitude. Gratitude's been present in my practice from day one. I was very fortunate. Gratitude is very uplifting. And I was grateful initially because I'd been traveling in Nepal, Tibet, and in rural Thailand, and this was back in 1987, 88. 87. And I really saw people who live very simply. And, you know, I never really have had a huge amount. It's never been important to me to have a lot of money. And it was more important for me to find something that made me happy. And that's what I could never find that career that made me happy. Could never figure out what that was. But so I was traveling with, I think I mentioned it, I was going to go on this photography workshop, and I just decided, just travel until you run out of money. You may never get this opportunity again. So after the photography workshop, through circumstances, wasn't my plan. My plan was to go to India, but I got sick, and the doctor said, a woman traveling alone and you're really sick, don't go to India. Go to Thailand. I had friends trying to get me to come to Thailand. So that's what I did. And it was a good decision. But I took that first retreat. I had 2 weeks left before I left Thailand and was headed back over to England. And there was that retreat happening, and I took it. And when I went there, they said, normally we ask people to at least contribute towards the cost of the food, but on this retreat, it's been sponsored. Some people have gotten together and they're sponsoring this retreat. So there were these Thai people sponsoring this retreat for about 70 or 80. It was mostly Westerners. There were a few Thai people on the retreat. And that concept, not only was it the gift of the retreat, but that concept in itself, the fact that somebody wanted to do that, my heart just opened. And I really have a strong belief that things came in. I was more receptive because it increased my level of trust that nobody was expecting anything out of me. And then the encouragement to just take these teachings and see, do these work? Are they true? Don't just believe what somebody says. So from the get-go, gratitude's been in my practice. I went to England and stayed at the monasteries, and they never asked anything of me except that I participate as part of the community in my role as a layperson visiting. So gratitude's been big, and I was going to say, and for that I'm grateful. But I am. Because it's really helped me stick in there through some really challenging times, really challenging mind states. And so really explore gratitude if you haven't already. I'm sure a lot of you have. We're all just parts. You know, sometimes people come to me and they say, oh, thank you so much for what you do. And I know people benefit because I've lived my life the way I have, and that's great, but, you know, really I did it because I didn't have a choice. There was something else guiding me and pulling me, and I don't really feel responsible. I just knew it was a good pull, and it was worthy of following, but you know, really, I just, all of a sudden, life made sense, and that's how I wanted to live, so. We all have that capability. We all can do that if we listen, and maybe it won't be in our work that we do. Maybe it'll be with something else that complements our work. I know already some people, a lot of people in here are already on that path, and the world is a better place for it. But really, the best thing that we can do in this tumultuous world is really just keep recollecting and coming back to that center and remembering what's important. And that's how other people will benefit, is by our own being clear, being mindful of what we're doing and how we live and our own skillfulness. So I guess that's the encouragement I would give people today. as the change in momentum, the change in energy happens, it's inevitable, whether you like it or not. Recollect, this is the beginning of that practice of going out and leaving this contained space of retreat. Tomorrow at this time, this will just be an empty room. There won't be tape on the floor, there won't be any cushions. And everybody will be taking this energy out. So I just encourage you to really remember the things that have been important, that have been useful, and be creative and be willing to really try, and don't let yourself get lost in the frustration. Sometimes it's frustrating trying to hold it together in the midst of flurry. But as soon as you remember, you come back. It always comes back to that. So, I guess that's just wanting to share something. I had no idea what I was going to say, and the words just rolled. So, but just wish you all well, and thank you for your presence in this hall. It was remarkable how still this hall got very quickly and early on in this retreat, and it's a gift for me as well to be here. So take anything that's useful and leave the rest. And
Hantamayam Dhamma Kataya Sadhukaram Dandama Se.